or to Liverpool, and anybody in the NHS will recognise these challenges. But our bed numbers are going down. Now, they're going down nationally, but also at the New Royal, there's 127 less beds. I could open up the bed status at the moment and tell you that it's probably full. We might have 20, 30 spare beds with TCIs for today. So how do we manage 150 less? Our population's getting older, and they're living longer, and they represent a hospital more. And our money and our budgets are only going one way, and that's shrink, and they'll only go one way in the future, and that's shrink. There's the, as Rachel at Salford christened it on Twitter the other day, there's the Carter paradox of how we're meant to have 7% of back office when actually we need to invest more in IT. Because if you do everything you need to do, then you can't possibly have your 7% Carter safety. But money's a challenge. But the reality is our budgets are tough. They're not as hard as social services. The social services cuts are being savage. And they're probably going to get even more savage in the future. And the reality is, we've got patients in beds, 156 yesterday, ready for discharge patients, who can't be discharged because there's nowhere in social care for them. There was a lady that's been there for 27 days because there's nobody to clean a commode once a day. Care staff get paid less than staff working in Liverpool One shopping centre. So how does the care recruit? How do they have that? How do we work? And where we're pushing our GDE is around three aspects fundamentally. It's one, how do we stop people coming into hospital? So we're going to be looking at using sensor technology there, which I'll come to in a sec. Then when they're in hospital, how do we make that as efficient as possible? So that's the same things that Sheila touched on. It's, you know, it's sepsis early warning, quicker prescriptions. Everyone's been in hospital, they're told they're going home in the afternoon at 10 o'clock, but you don't get to go home until 5 o'clock because you've got to wait for the pharmacist to come to get for your drugs. Well, there's no need for that because we've got enough intelligence to know that they should be pre-bagged the day before. And then it's how do we stop them coming back in the future? And for that, we want to look at using more of the genomic type data. So we've got e-prescribing, and that's great, but it doesn't e-prescribe against your DNA. So if you've got a fast or a slow metabolism, you might need a different amount of dosage of the drug. So perhaps if we took those variants from the DNA and included it in the algorithms, we might be able to prescribe against your DNA rather than you're a white male in your 40s at a certain weight, so that's your drug. So if we can just move on. We'll skip through the GDE vision, but essentially it's we're going to be the best. Or second best, Sheila. And we won't go through because we haven't got time to go through, but if we just click through these, Liverpool, well, Northwest rather than Liverpool, but the Northwest is a pioneer digitally within this country and always has been and should be very proud of that. I do think we're a digital powerhouse in the Northwest. There are three GDEs. If you, there's Arrow Park, there's ourselves, there's Salford. If you fly a crow in that line, that's not very far. I'd guess it's probably about 20 miles. There's two in our STP. There's 44 STPs. There's only 12 GDEs. So proportionally, we must have the most in there. And that's because of the stuff that we're historically good at doing, which is we share data a lot. We have data sharing agreements, and we've got over the information governance hurdles. And I do think with information governance, those guys get a poor ride because you should hate the game, not the player. And the reality is information governance aren't there to block what we do. They're there to protect the organisation from reputational fines. But they're perceived as blockers. And I always think it's a bit like a parking attendant. You know, don't moan about getting a parking ticket. If you don't park on the double yellows, you won't get the fine. So we do have a history in Liverpool of sharing data. So because of that, we were one of the first to have a regional PACS service that others are now emulating. So if you log into PACS on the Cheshire and Merseyside footprint, you can see all images for all patients in all hospitals without any organisational barriers. Manchester are now wanting to do the same thing. London are wanting to do the same thing because they had it regionally, but they didn't have it post-London. So we do have a history of doing things, and we have great links with SMEs in Liverpool, the e-health cluster, apps developers, etc. And I think this is something which I would implore everyone in the NHS and the private sector to get together, actually, because we all go off and say we're going to write an app, we're going to develop an app. And if I had an app for everything that was going to be an app, we'd have 100 apps. Why should the Royal go off and write one, and then Aintree go off and write one, and then Arrow Park go off and write one, when it's the same thing, it's just a different badge on the front of it? So we need to get better and smarter at collaborative working on those sort of developments. So if we can just move through. So some of the disruption stuff, there's three more. And I haven't got time to go through all these, but I welcome any questions on Slido, which I think is fantastic. I will be using Slido after I've left here. The sensor tech in the top left, this is the one that we're most excited about. It started off with the realization in the single room we need to know whether the patient's fallen over. And then it moved to conversations with Sensor City and the university, et cetera, about, well, actually, can you put the sensors in the home, and can you predict if they're going to fall, and can we preventively send nurses there before they do fall, rather than then they're admitted into A&E? And the answer to that is yes, we think we can. At the moment, Sensor City has developed a solution which they have evidence will predict with 85% accuracy if you're going to fall over 4 days later. But it takes 3 weeks to learn your movements and the algorithms behind it. So what we would like to do is invest a little bit there from our GD with regards to some more level compute and maybe some AI. And can we condense that 3 hours down, 3 weeks down to 3 hours? Because if we could I then put that in the single bedrooms and identify if the patients are going to fall over? And we've got pilots and all good stuff at the moment where we're rolling sensors out that disenable the disruption of even basic things like the e-news and the muse. You put the sensor on the patient, it can take 7 of the 9 indicators. Automatically, it can flag. And as part of the pilot on one of our wards, we actually identified that 2 patients were having a mild form of a heart attack between ops that wouldn't have been identified on routine bedside ops because it dropped back down again. And that tech is not expensive. It works out about £50 per sensor, per patient. Well, I'm paying more than £50 in nursing ops and HCA ops. So it's a tech worth investing in, we believe. The second one is our electronic patient record, which we're going to roll out across the city. And this has nothing to do with STPs and all those wonderful things that are in the media recently. The reality is there is no point in Liverpool having a separate EPR and 8 different providers in North Mersey. You can argue all day long whether there should be 8 providers in North Mersey. But the fact that each one at the moment has its own EPR is ridiculous. So what we're doing is we're putting a new single EPR in at the Women's, Aintree and the Royal. That accounts for about 75% of adult activity in North Mersey. It doesn't do anything radical or new. So for example, the Women's Hospital on Meditech, they've been doing e-prescribing since 1997. So it's not suddenly they're going to say, oh, we can do e-prescribing. But what it does is it puts the consistent platform across so that we can start doing the avoidable variation and we can start having consistent care pathways and consistent documentation. And the approach we're taking with the deployment on that documentation is we're going to take the Royal College suite and the consultants and the doctors will have to argue why they're not using it, rather than put doctors in the room and ask them to design a form, because we've got about 3,500 forms to design. We could be there for about 10 years before we agree on the form. So the EPR is really exciting. We're just waiting for NHSI sign off on that business case. So if anyone's here from NHSI, can you get a wiggle on? Then the I reflects that we want to put a spin up a bed management system that includes all the social care, hospices, etc. within the city. Because, as I say, if we've got patients that are sat in beds because there's no identified social care for them, social care have no money. Nursing homes didn't have any money when social care did. We need to have a view of what beds are available, what skill sets are available, and they need to have a view of what their TCIs are coming out of the hospital. Because no social worker is going to be able to phone every single care home in Liverpool region to find a bed for Doris. So we need that single click of the view. This isn't anything new or radical. Cumbria have been doing it for a number of years. But it's about doing it at scale and getting it working. And I think that's quite a positive feature. And if you consider the bedside system and you consider the sensors, a lot of people have said to me at the commissioners, well, why are you spending your money on that? Because that should be the community trust or that should be social care. But the reality is they come into our A&E, they come into our beds. There's evidence out there, if you're 70 years old, for every week you spend prone in a bed, your musculoskeletal age is by 10 years. So if you come in at 70, you're there for 3 weeks, you're going home, your body thinks you're 100. Now it does catch back up over about 6 weeks, but during that 6 weeks you're then susceptible to falling, And then the vicious circle will happen because you'll come back, then there'll be no bed for you again. Then you block, or we shouldn't call them bed blockers, that's disrespectful. But the system's snarling up because of the inability to get these people into the correct place. The best place to be is not hospital. You should be in hospital when you're acutely unwell, not when you are well, because it's, as our CCIO calls it, a disease palace. So we do need to get the patients out. Then there's the genomics, and I say this at every place that I do these presentations. I do think genomics, personalised medicine, is the future of healthcare. And I should just end it there, really. But the power of what we can do with genomics data is mind-blowing. And we do need to change it to personalised healthcare. We know now that there's certain people that won't react to chemotherapy, for example. Or chemotherapy, they will react, but it's not as good as it should be. So imagine if they could be offered a different treatment, or the patients that are given insulin for diabetes, even though it's not going to make a blind bit of difference with regards to their treatment. So should we be personalising their healthcare around it? Yes. And the 100,000 Genome Project is enabling that. The pharmaco piece that we can do, as I touched on with the prescribing, I think is really positive. What we need to get over there is the confidence in the public to consent to that data being shared. Because it's one thing sharing your medical record, it's another thing sharing your DNA. And there's a lot of perceptions around that we need to probably think nationally how we sell that. And then the predictive, well, not the predictive analytics, but the clever data. And we need to stick that into AI. We've got to. I can't have an army of analysts churning through data to give me the answer. Data will confess to anything if you torture it enough. What I want to identify is what's causing that. What are the trigger points? So we're all collecting e-rostering data, we're all collecting incident data, we're all collecting clinical data. Is anyone stitching that together yet to work out whether there's a correlation between safe staffing levels and incidents and the patient outcomes? And if they are they doing that by clunky spreadsheets and a graph and a board report, or should we be throwing that through some form of AI that comes out that tells you the outcome? And there's some really interesting videos on the internet from Google DeepMind, and I'm not going into the research side of Google DeepMind here. It's a different conversation. But have a look at the videos of how it learned how to play the Atari games. Because the Google DeepMind is fascinating because you give it an outcome that you're seeking. You don't give it any parameters. It has to learn its own parameters to work the outcome out. And I do think that's what we should start doing a lot more with our data, because we've got the data in secondary healthcare. We've got geniuses that are out there that can do bits with individual parts of it. We haven't got the collective brains to look at the whole, and we need to put it into the whole. So that's one of the things we're going to do on GDE. So if we move through. And I'm not going to touch on all these, but in effect, everything that we do should be clinically led. And if it's not clinically led, don't do it. And as I say, it's not my job to make doctors' life harder. But I'm perceived to be doing that a lot of the time. We put electronic forms in readiness for our EPR. We've got 5,000 electronic forms being created a day. And we're getting national recognition for it. I'm also getting 247 emails a week of complaints. I'm getting separate incidents, and I'm being called to 3 or 4 clinical bodies to explain why I've made their life a nightmare by giving them electronic forms. So it's got to be clinically led, because it's their benefit. And then the final one on here is, we do think, if you just click through, and this will keep the accountants happy, but we've estimated, as part of everything that I've just said we're going to do, and this is a conservative estimate because we're only basing this on tangibles. And a bit like Sheila said, I don't think in the NHS we do benefits very well. If I took every business case that comes in front of me at the board at the Royal with regards to this will reduce length of stay, we wouldn't have any length of stay. So we've got to be a bit smarter. So we've taken this conservative tangible cash releasing. So we put the EPR in, we're going to turn these 5 systems off. We do this, we're going to take these beds out of the equation. We've estimated that £60 million savings over the next 10 years just for the Royal. If you look at our STP footprint, we're estimating a £1 billion black hole in 10 years' time. If every trust in this area delivers every single one of its cash releasing saving plans, but if we did, there's still a £200 million black hole. So we need, technology isn't going to fix that, but technology should enable it. And if we just move through, and this is just to refer back to, you know, it's suppliers that say to me, oh, it's on the roadmap. We play roadmap bingo in work. And it's great, yeah, it's what you're planning on doing. But the roadmap isn't flat, the roadmap's like that. We've got, if we put an electronic WHO checklist in, I mean, if everyone can remember when we put that in, the controversy that existed in acute hospitals, whether it should be the scrub nurse or the consultant or the anaesthetist who was actually shouting out the WHO checklist, that in itself was politics. Now we're saying, oh, we can do that digitally, and you're going to do it on a form, and it's going to be on an iPad, and it's going to be on some Wi-Fi that I can't guarantee is going to work 100% of the time. And they've got a patient there anaesthetised. Bumps. And we need to work better with SMEs, with companies, with some bright young things in industry. We need to work out how do we smooth those bumps out. Because they are smoothable, but it might be a change of an approach. And I think that's it. Thank you.